Hello.
Today is the 6th of August and the time is 3:25 a.m. Can I ask you for your name, your date of birth and where you've come from?
My name's Alison Baker. My birth date is the 27th of December 66 and I've come up from Swanage to take part in the project, but I'm from London.
How did you hear about the project?
I think I must have heard about it on the BBC internet website, and then I looked onto the webpage and it said sign up, so I signed up and I thought it'd be a fun thing to take part in.
Why did you feel you wanted to take part in it?
I think it was the opportunity to be involved in something that Anthony Gormley had done, because we've seen some of his works before and really liked them. My children are at an age where we can take them to art galleries and they can enjoy whatever they see or not enjoy it as much as we do. And we took them to see a couple of Anthony Gormley exhibitions in the last couple of years, which they really liked. So he's just an artist that I've looked out for in case there was anything else on that we could go and see. And this was on, and I thought, oh, that'll be fun. Didn't expect to get chosen. Forgot about it, and then got contacted. And I just went jumping around the kitchen thinking, oh my gosh, how fantastic. So I'm just really excited to have a chance to take part in something which is as big as this.
How did you feel when you heard you actually did have a place?
Absolutely thrilled to bits. I couldn't stop smiling. I told the kids more than once, phoned my husband, phoned a few friends. I didn't tell too many people. I haven't told many people that it's the middle of the night, but I didn't think they'd come and see me. But one of my friends said, oh, we'll be there. So I thought that was fantastic. A few of my friends were on holiday, but they said they'll look in on the internet. So I thought, well, that's probably enough. I don't know what it's going to actually be like. I don't know how I'll actually feel on the day. It might be raining. It might be terrible. I'll tell people afterwards. They can look back if I thought it was a positive experience, which I think it probably will be.
What are you going to do in the plinth?
I spent an awfully long time thinking about it once I realised I had a place. So I thought, I can be a statue, because it's all about being statues. And I thought, well, actually, that's probably going to be quite dull for an hour. I thought I could dress up. But I'm not really a dressing up kind of person. I haven't got any particular visual talents, so I thought, you know, it'd be great if I could juggle or do cheerleading or something that's actually sort of fun to watch, but I can't. And then I thought, well, my kids are going to be there, my husband's going to be there, it'd be nice to involve them in some way. So I thought the best way of involving them would be to either play games. We thought we might play hide and seek around the square. I would give them glow sticks and they would run off and hide and wave their glow sticks and I would shout when I saw them. And then I thought, actually, if I'm going to give them glow sticks, I could throw them from the top of the plinth, and then that just developed into throwing lots of things from the top of the plinth and then catching them in something. So we all bought fishing nets and I bought lots of lightweight items and sweets and some chocolates that I could then throw off the plinth, and things like streamers, sparklers, which apparently I'm not allowed to use, but they can down in the square. And I was also going to cook them breakfast, because I thought, well, 4 a.m, they'll want something to eat. But because I can't cook at the top of the plinth, we've brought a little stove, which either my husband will use down on the ground, in which case he can try and throw something up to me. Or they'll just have a little picnic and I'll have my picnic when I come down. So yeah, I thought we would just do lots of things that keep the kids entertained.
The interaction is something you feel is going to be important?
Absolutely. There's no point in them standing there and me not do something. And because I can't do anything particular, like I said, visual, for them to watch. And my little boy, she came out with a gem. And he said, "Mummy, just be yourself." So I thought, well, what? I'm a teacher. I could do a spelling lesson. I could get a blackboard up there. And then I thought, actually, one way of teaching is through games. So I thought, right, we'll play games and make it fun.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your family?
My husband is Paul. We've been married for 15 and a half years. My children are just about to turn 10 and just about to turn 12 this month. They've both got their birthdays coming up. Ever since they were born, we've always treated them as part of the family. Whatever we do with them, even if we think they're too young to do it. We've never not done something because the kids are too young. So we take them camping. We've travelled a lot. We've been climbing mountains and going up a hill. I mean, just all sorts of things. And we just thought, well, they won't remember it, but we're going to take them away. And we've never let that stop us. We like an adventure and we like being together as a family. So we've just come back from this week in Swanage. And we thought, well, you know, I'm not going to come up on a train by myself. We're all going to get in the car, come up together. And that's why the event has also been focused on them as well. Very much part of involving them as much as possible.
Does the way you choose to bring up your children differ in any way from how you were brought up?
Yes, yes it does. That's a can of worms. We do a lot more as a family than I can recall doing as a family. My two children are very similar in the things they enjoy. They play together an awful lot. They're very happy to be together. If we're away, they're very happy to share a room. If we're in a tent, they're very happy to share a sleeping quarter. They get on very, very well, and that makes it very easy to do things as a family. I can remember growing up not being as close to my sister because we're very different, and I think we were allowed to be different, so we were allowed to do different things. So there's never a sense that, you know, one will do this together. It was, if you don't want to, okay, you don't have to, you can. So there wasn't that sense of enforced, you know, we're all going to do it together. And I think that we've kind of imposed that on our children, and so they've grown up not really thinking there was a choice. They very much do what we do.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Northwest London, in Hendon, and went to school fairly locally. I was the first one to go off to study for a degree, so I went to Oxford Polytechnic, and during that experience I spent a year in France. So I think I broke a few moulds as I was growing up, just by sort of taking education a bit further. And then I went into teaching, so I did another course of PGCE, kept on studying, and I've carried on broadening out my qualifications, carried on studying. We moved to Maida Vale when I met Paul. We lived there for 5 years, had a lovely time in town, and then, in fact, when I was pregnant, we moved back to the suburbs, and we moved to Bushy, which is where my husband grew up. So he said he'd never go back there, but there we go, we did. And we've lived in Bushy ever since.
What did your parents do?
For a job? Well, my father is a toy wholesaler, hence the fishing net and the bubbles. My mum didn't work. She ran a couple of businesses at home. She ran an au pair business at home and a mail order sort of sportswear business from home. I think the au pair business was something that she set up herself, and she was always doing that when I was little. And then when that stopped, she wanted something else to do, but she always worked at home. So she was always around. My dad worked long hours and was on the road delivering toys. And he had a warehouse. And he calls himself semi-retired now, but he isn't. And he still's out every day and goes to his warehouse and sees his old mates and does a few rounds and still is very much in toys. So he still gets hold of things.
What drew you into education?
Funny enough, the only thing I loved doing when I was, one of the things I loved doing was reading. I was always reading. And everyone used to say, oh, you're going to be an English teacher. And they used to say that all throughout my growing up years. And so my one response was, no, I'm not. I'll choose what I want to do. And so I was never, ever, ever going to be a teacher. And I did a degree in English and French because they were the two things that I loved. But I absolutely wasn't going to be a teacher. And I wanted to go into advertising. So I worked for a year in advertising and hated it and thought, this actually isn't what I want to do at all. And when I did some soul searching and really, really thought about what, I mean, it took quite a long time. I drew a very big spreadsheet thinking, right, what is it I want to do? And everything pointed to teaching. And I kind of thought, okay, now I've made the decision myself. I can hold my head up and I can go into teaching. So I became an English teacher.
How did that feel?
Oh, fantastic. It was the right decision. You know, when you know something is the right decision, clouds just lift. You just think, oh, this is it. So I gave up my job. I left it very late to actually apply to do a PGCE. It was April. And every single college in the whole of the country was full, apart from one. So I went there, and that was Thames Poly. And I did my English PGCE there, and it was on the advice, actually, of my English teacher from when I was at school. She was my inspiration. And one of my lecturers from college, when I was doing my degree, I actually phoned them both up and said, I'm thinking of becoming a teacher. And they said, well, you know, you could do this, you could go here, you could try this. And they both said that Avery Hill, it used to be called, was a really good place to go. So I went there and I was very lucky. They had just opened a new course and there were still spaces on it. And I said, right, I'll have one. And it was very, I resigned within 4 days, left my job, and that was that. And in my first job, they asked me where I would teach French. So I said, well, I've got a degree in French, all right, I will. I wasn't really, didn't know how to do it. Did that for a year, and it was so awful, just not being a French teacher, but having to teach French. I said, I won't do that again, so I made sure I never taught French again. And taught English, taught drama for a year. Again, it's not something I was qualified to do, it's just part of my degree. So I said, I'll never teach drama again. I think you actually need to know how to do something. And you can't just say, well, I'll just put on that hat and wear that hat for a bit. It's not really fair to the people you're teaching. It's not really fair to yourself as a teacher or a colleague. So I said, no, I'll just stick to English. And then I went into special needs teaching after the kids were born, and I went back to work. And that was something else I wasn't really qualified to do. And I thought, I can, you know, English, dyslexia, spelling, I can do that. And actually, I had a terrible first year doing that. Realised I wasn't qualified to teach dyslexic children, so I did a course in dyslexia. And it was a whole new way of teaching. It astonished me that it was so different teaching children with special needs. And so I've now made that the direction I've travelled in. I've left English teaching behind. I'm now a learning support coordinator. And I mainly teach one-to-one girls with a range of learning difficulties. And privately, I still teach English, A-level and GCSE, but in school. So it's always... You know, I can't find the words to say how much I love what I do. Love teaching English, love encouraging my kids to read, love watching them read books, love listening to them use new words, love talking to them about books. I like getting them excited in things. We've just been in, we were in Dorchester yesterday, so I told my daughter that Thomas Hardy came from Dorchester, and one of his books that I loved was The Mayor of Casterbridge, and I told her the plot. She goes, oh, I'd love to read that. So I went to a secondhand bookshop, and funny enough, couldn't find The Mayor of Casterbridge. I got it at home, but we weren't at home. But found a book that I'd been looking for ages, so I bought that instead. So I was really chuffed. I've tried to curtail my book buying habits. I mainly now shop on Amazon and buy them for one piece secondhand and just pay the postage. But I've now discovered that secondhand bookshops, they cost £1. And you could just take them there and then, so that might be a new avenue. It's a bit of a collecting thing. I just love to have books. And I'm always happy if the children aren't doing homework, but they're reading. I would much rather let them read, as long as they do the homework afterwards. But I forgot what your original question was.
What book did you just buy?
Oh, golly, it's called Chatterton by Peter Ackroyd, and I had it years and years ago, and I've lost it. And it's such a multi-layered story. It's about so many different characters. It's about Thomas Chatterton, and I think he was a forger. It's been years since I read it. But one of the Pre-Raphaelites painted a picture of Thomas Chatterton lying dead, having just taken arsenic, and the model who posed for the picture had an affair with the painter's wife, and the historian who was researching Thomas Chatterton uncovered all these sorts of things. And Thomas Chatterton was this forger who created fake documents that were supposedly from a medieval monk that were found in a church, and but he was also a writer in his own right. So I mean, just so many interesting characters, and the whole thing is, it keeps changing. It's a very multi-layered book. So I saw it, and I've been looking for it actually in secondhand bookshops and markets subconsciously, I mean, over the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, just generally poking around, and suddenly there it was, and I couldn't believe it, so I bought it. I was so pleased. And that was in Dorchester, so yeah, that was a pretty good trip.
Was literature something that was big in your life while you were growing up?
Well, no one at home read except me, and I don't really know where that came from. When I say no one read, mum reads, but not as avidly as me, and she doesn't buy books that I'm aware of. I buy her books, but I tend to buy everybody books. I think I just haunted libraries. I think I used the school library and the public library. I don't remember buying books as a child. We had the famous 5 books. I remember loving those. I don't know is the answer. I don't know where it came from, but it was my English teacher. I know exactly where it came from. It was my English teacher. I was reading some terrible books when I was about 10, and they were part of a series. And we had to keep a reading diary, so I wrote down every single book that, in this series that I read. And one day my English teacher said, it's about time, you moved on. Have you read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? That was the book. And I said, no. And I kind of thought, Hitchcock, Alfred Hitchcock? I didn't really know what it was. I bought it, took it on holiday. I was blown away by it. I thought it was just the funniest, cleverest, best thing. So I bought every other Douglas Adam books that I could find. It's all coming back to me now. That's exactly where it came from. And then I went on from there. That's what started me off, and that's why she was my inspiration.
So when you're not reading and you're not at work and you're not with your family, what else do you like to do?
There isn't that much time when I'm not at work and not with my family. I have a close set of girlfriends who I do love very much. I try and see them when I can. I play netball. I started a netball team when I was pregnant with my son. Before I knew I was pregnant, I started a local netball team. And I basically press-ganged all my friends into turning up to play, and a lot of them didn't want to, and I said they had to. And they all came, and we just made it a regular thing, and some of them fell by the wayside. And we all got pregnant at various times, but there is a real sense of commitment, and I often say that I'm very strict, and they're too scared to cancel and not come, so they come in spite of injury. I said, unless you're actually dead, or, you know, you've got to come. We've been doing it for 10 years. I've kept it going. I don't know how, and I certainly don't know why, because it's a thankless job. But every Monday night we turn up and we play netball together, and it's great fun, and it's a way of keeping my girlfriends close. It's a way of seeing each other once a week. And when they can't come, I miss them. And when they come a week later, it's just a reunion. It's very sociable. We're not competitive. We don't play other teams. We're not in a league. It's purely self-indulgent. And I only play with people I like. And if somebody brings along a friend and I don't like them, I won't call them back. But I won't tell them, I don't think we're busy. You know, the team's full, there isn't a space. But if I like them, then they're all welcome. And I've kept it, that's why it's such a lovely game. I've kept it very warm and very friendly. So that's why I do that on a Monday night. I did a couple of charity walks, so I enjoyed the training for that. I did the moonwalk. In fact, that's why I didn't mind the 4 o'clock slot. I thought, well, I've done London in the morning, and, you know, I walked through the night a couple of times to do the Playtext moonwalk. We like holidays. We go on holiday, not a lot, but when we can. And we like to we like America, and my husband is very good at planning big trips, so he'll start planning in November for a big trip the following July, and he'll plan every detail. We like to take an RV and go camping in America, and so he plans routes and itineraries, and he plans campsites and park opening times. We go into all the national parks. The kids do junior ranger programs. And they're the highlights of our year. We go on big trips. We ski. So we've taught the kids to ski. We invite our friends to join us. We tend to rent houses that are big enough for an extra family. And we invite friends that we know travel, and they'll come out and fly out and see us. We go to Israel quite a lot. They're the two countries we mostly visit. I'd say holidays and friends.
What are the major differences you find being in America to being in England?
A lot of the stuff we do in America we don't do here because either we can't or it doesn't exist. The thing we like about America is the actual America, the land, the geography and the geology. We tend to avoid the cities and we tend to avoid the people. The people are lovely, but we like being in the wilderness. And it has a lot of wilderness. We did a trip 3 years ago to Utah, and a lot of our friends said, what on earth are you going to Utah for? What's Utah got? And we said, well, it's got land, it's got landscape, it's got formations, and it's got caves and cliffs and all sorts of other things. And our closest friends are there now doing our itinerary from 3 years. And they're posting pictures on Facebook, which so we can actually see where they are. The wide open spaces, the ability to drive an RV, and not worry about holding up traffic. The roads are big enough, the parks are geared up for it, the camping is all there, everything you need is there. The shopping's easy, finding things you need is easy. There's a Radio Shack if you need a piece of electrical equipment. My husband's very into gadgets and wires and laptops and walkie-talkies and things. It's a very easy country to visit, and there's an awful lot there. We haven't tired of it yet. And there's always another big trip around the corner. We're planning one for 2 years' time. Hopefully to Glacier National Park and Yellowstone. And maybe with other friends who've expressed an interest. We've done it, I think, this will be our 6th or 7th big RV trip in either America. We went to Australia and New Zealand when the kids were babies, which took them with us, went around the world. We just had the time. And a lot of people said, what are you doing with the children? We said, we're taking them with us. And they couldn't understand it. My daughter had her 4th birthday in Australia, and my son was two just after we got back, and we were away for just over 2 months, and it was never a problem. It's just, you know, they go where we go.
What does the future bring for you?
All sorts of exciting things, actually. It's my daughter's bat mitzvah in 3 weeks' time. She's turning 12, so we're having a big celebration for her. My son's having his in 2012. We've got the date for that one already. Work is always exciting. Every new academic year is different from the previous academic year, so I'm looking forward to September. I've got lots of new things that I'll be doing at school. Planning more trips, watching the kids grow up, wondering where they'll go to university, wondering when we can retire. You know, there's so much you can do. There's so much. I'm amazed that people don't do more. People I've spoken to haven't heard of this project. They don't know why I'm coming to Trafalgar Square. They don't really know why I'm standing on a plinth. And if they do know I'm doing it, they haven't really put it into any context. People ask us what we're doing because they can then do it themselves. Because we think I'm always looking at, you know, new things to explore and do. So whatever's around the corner, hopefully we'll join in with.
What do you, coming back to the plinth, what do you hope to gain from your experience?
I've no idea. It seems like a bit of a giggle. I'm not really a publicity person. I'm not really a look at me person. I'm feeling a little bit anxious actually about the fact there's lots of people out there and they will be looking at me and I will kind of have to perform a bit. A new perspective. I'll take some photos. It'll be fairly unique and I will come away with a sense that I'm quite privileged. Not many people are going to do that. I'll remember it. My kids will be excited about it. They can talk about it. They told their art teachers at school. And they thought their art teachers would know about Anthony Gormley. A sense of being involved. A sense of taking part. A sense of, you know, making a little mark or a bit of posterity.
Is there anything you'd like the people who watch you to gain from your hour in the plinth?
I hope they find it fun. I hope I am who they think I am. I hope they watch me and go, yep, that's Alison. I didn't want to dress up in a costume because that wouldn't then be me. I didn't want to do anything that was deliberately not me because then the people watching would know it wasn't me. I'm only really interested in my friends watching, which is why I actually only told a few close friends and nobody else. I hope they don't say it was embarrassing. Everyone said to me, what are you going to do? Most of them said, oh my God, what are you going to do? And that put a bit of pressure. Oh gosh, I'll have to do something rather than just stand there. So I hope what I do works and is a laugh. It's only meant to be a giggle. And I hope a few of them watch it. I don't know really. I won't mind if they don't watch it. It'll be absolutely fine. But I hope it's, I hope it's what Mr. Gormley's looking for.
You got anything else you'd like to add?
I'd like to say thank you very much. I am, you know, thrilled we're here. And it was built into our week away that we would be coming back. It was that important. My whole family's come with me. It's lovely that we've done this together. And I really feel that we're doing it as a family. So anything that gives us the opportunity to do that is brilliant. So thank you.
Thank you very much.